Welcome, everyone, to day four of the International Council on English Braille's Executive Committee midterm meeting. I got those in a different order today, but it's all the same thing. Today, in our first session, we're going to have a report from the Constitution and Bylaws Committee, Miri Schnackenberg Chair, with a number of actions to put forth. And after that, we will have country reports. And in the second half, we'll have a report from the Public Relations Committee and an open discussion on the discussion on promotion of Braille and public relations and all that. All right. Anything else we need to, any housekeeping details before we start the Constitution and Bylaws?
No.
There's a hand. And that hand is who?
Sue, can you let us know when there's like we hear the hands, but it's easier if you let us
Well,
know.
we have to tread through all the co-hosts.
Did we lose Sue?
This is
I don't think
Marie.
so.
It's
Sorry,
showing up
I'm
as a. Oh,
talking
okay.
without
Sorry.
being on. Did you want me to allow them to talk?
Who raised their
It's a
hand?
phone number. I'm sorry. I don't know who.
Oh, we're yeah. Let's not. Well, okay, sure.
This is Michael from the United States. Real quick, are you going to be recording this? Because when I entered the room, it did not say the meeting was recorded.
It is being recorded.
Okay, thank you.
Has the
You're
recording
welcome.
started?
Yes, it has started.
Yes. Great. Thank you.
Yes.
I didn't hear it either.
I did. Okay. So, Mary, take it away.
Good morning. Good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. Welcome to Bylaws and Constitution. Can you hear me, Judy?
Yes.
Yes. Good. Okay. The Bylaws Committee has taken very seriously the need to ensure that our bylaws are consistent and clear and deliver an even-handed approach to all the different things that ICEB needs to do. And we're concerned about trying to do that in a way that doesn't mean you've got to grab the dictionary to figure out what's that word all about. So my first request to each of you and all your colleagues is if you come across some language in the bylaws that just doesn't resonate with you, please tell us. We want these bylaws to be useful and accessible and helpful and supportive. The trouble with a lot of stuff in constitutions and guidelines and bylaws and stuff is that whenever anything goes wrong, a new bylaw arrives. But you can also have a new bylaw when something new needs to be addressed. And we've been listening this week to the need for working groups. And so the Bylaws Committee has heard that request, and we will think about what kinds of words would the Executive Committee like us to put into the bylaws. But just to remind us, first of all, when we go through the bylaws, we're going through the bylaws under an instruction from the Constitution. And the Constitution says ICEB needs to set up a bylaws committee, keep an eye on the Constitution and keep an eye on the bylaws and review the bylaws in particular as necessary. So we can change the bylaws during a given 4-year term, but only if we get 2/3 majority of the executive committee, and only if the proposal to change the bylaw has been circulated a minimum of 30 days in advance. We can also propose changes to the constitution. And those changes have to go to the executive committee first, and they cannot come into effect until the next General Assembly, when they may or may not be adopted by the General Assembly. So the Bylaws Committee is totally and appropriately constrained by what it can do. Now, we've been going through bylaws, and unfortunately, we send the bylaws to the executive committee, and whoa, they tell us things that we haven't taken into account. So these bylaws that we're looking at, first of all, are 13 bylaws that in earlier versions have been to the executive committee, and then the executive committee says, whoa, that's not quite right. Please look into this, which is what we've done. And I can go through the names of those 13 clauses, but I'm quite sure you don't want me to read them, and I'm not going to. I brailled some material for this yesterday, and it ended up being about 70, 11 by 11 and a half pages, which is a bit dramatic. So we're not going to do that, but what I do want us to do is check to see if we can take the 13 clauses and pass them. In addition to that, we want to have a bit of a steer about the membership clause. And I'm pleased I heard Christo's voice. He's looking after the membership committee. They went away to look carefully at Article 4, which is the Constitution, but also Clause 4, which is the bylaws. And I'd like Christo to help us with the membership section. The Bylaws Committee doesn't have any proposal about membership to take this morning. We are wanting guidance. So the final thing to let you know about is that there's quite a bit more work to do, but because the executive committee is working as well as it is, they're giving us a steer about what they want and helping us get this right. So I really want to try and close off the majority of the bylaws committee work by the middle of next year, in plenty of time for members to begin to socialise changes in the potential proposed changes to the Constitution for 2028. The other thing I want to say is that the committee is really privileged because we have Christo, Matthew, Bill Jolly from Australia, who's not able to be here, and Judy working with me. And if I think such and such a thing will work, somebody else is going to point out, no, that won't work because how about we say this? It's a really strong, supportive committee. And we have had some ups and downs where different people have not been available at different times. And so Bill Jolly's not here this morning because he's away on holiday, which some retired people seem to be able to do. But my other bylaws committee members are here, and that's terrific. So can I just go through the list of the 13 clauses? So clause 5.5 is about the resolutions committee, and that's to do with what happens at the General Assembly. And similarly, clause 5.7 is about the papers committee at the General Assembly. Clause 6.7 is about the vice president. 6.8, the secretary. 6.12, the immediate vice president. Sorry, the immediate past president. Clause 7.2 is about the unified English Braille Code Maintenance Officer and their committee. Now, that's the first clause that signals that we are trying to group things of a like kind in the same place. So where we've got an officer in charge of a committee, we have put that officer and their details into the clause to do with that committee. So you don't have to keep hunting around through C references. Clause 7.3 is the Technical Materials Committee, and the Technical Materials Officer and the Technical Materials Committee. Now, that clause is an example of a committee where we really had little or nothing in the bylaws about that committee, and yet we are having to deal with so many issues around science, technology, engineering, and maths symbols, etc. So we kind of need that committee to be respected. Clause 7.4 is the public relations officer and their committee. Clause 7.5, Braille technology. Clause 7.6, music Braille committee. Clause 7.8, the research committee. Those of you puzzled, clause 7.7 is the nominations committee, and we've already done that. Clause 8 is the treasurer and finance committee, and clause 9, the bylaws committee. So those are the 13 clauses. And first of all, I'd like to ask if there are any questions about those 13 clauses. Now, I can't monitor whether
We do
hands are
have a
raised.
hand. It's James Barton.
Hi,
Okay,
Mary.
James.
Just to go on record, I sent some quite extensive feedback about the latest draft. I wish that feedback to be taken as much as possible as friendly, i.e., it doesn't affect the general meaning of the clauses. However, there are some. I forget the precise numbers where I think there are some substantive changes. For example, there was one specifically for the music committee to respond to emails within 3 days, which I did not see against other committees, and therefore I suggest it should be deleted. So there are some unfriendly amendments as well.
Yes, what I'd like to do is because the bylaws committee has not had the opportunity to talk through all your amendments, what I have an uncomfortable feeling about is that there may be a slight problem. Well, there may be a major problem actually with whether or not you got the latest version of the bylaws committee
It was Doc
versions, but
79, the one that you
yes, I
sent out
know
to
that's Doc
everybody.
79. What I think we need to do is have a conversation with you. I'd like you to please trust that the bylaws committee shall have a conversation with you, and that if at the end of the conversation with you, you're still unhappy with what we talk about and why and what happens, then of course you have the duty to make the rest of the executive committee aware that you're not happy with the changes that you want. So I do recall the conversation that we did actually change that we did say that committee members needed to acknowledge emails within 7 days, and that actually went into all the committees. One of the things that we've become aware of is that people get onto committees and then don't seem to be following up through, and the Braille Authority of North America, which some of us call BANNER and others call BANNER, which is spelt BANNER, and we're quite sure it's not that. It's one of the things that they do is that 3 days originally came from BANNER. Now, I think we need to just do what we can to encourage people to reply to correspondence and to emails, and at least say, yes, I've got that. It's called a holding reply. Yes, I've got that. Yes, I'm going to get back to this. And I think that we just need to think about these things and try and support. The key thing is to support the nominations committee to understand what's involved in each committee. So my request to you, James, is I'm sorry that yes, your feedback did come through. Yes, it's gone to the bylaws committee. For various reasons, we either have people not available to attend a meeting, or other people are flat out busy doing 50,000 things. And we will come back to your issues. In the meantime, I would prefer, because you said you didn't want 13 clauses to come back, you told us off earlier this year for returning 13 clauses. I actually think that I'd like you to please trust that we will have this conversation with you, and we will come to an agreement on a number of things, and we may not come to agreement on some things, and we may need to bring that to the executive committee's attention.
Yeah,
All right.
forgive me, Mary. I didn't want to have a great long discussion about it. All I'm saying is, I want as much as possible the feedback that I gave to be friendly. So, for example, if I say, "Oh, can we take out the word technical because da 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 da," it doesn't substantively change the meaning of the rest of the clause in that particular case. However, I flagged that particular issue because it was only in the music committee. And if you're saying it should have been in all the clauses, I'm happy with that.
Not
But
the 3 days, no. Because
right, so
I
why is
remember,
it just in the music?
well, because I
That's the
think there
question.
might be an error on my part. All right.
Has that
That's
been
fine.
changed,
That's
Mary?
fine.
Has that been changed in document 79?
I'm not sure. I'll have to go back and have a look. But we did change it to 7 days and put it in all the committees. Because what we're really worried about is the number of times different chairs come to the executive committee meeting. I've sent a message to blah blah and I haven't had a reply. Okay.
Perhaps in the motion that we use to, if we're going to adopt the 13 clauses in document 79, we should include the fact that being sure that the time frame in the music committee's clause is 7 days.
Yes, sure.
My point is, it shouldn't be just the music committee.
Right.
Yes, and it and and
And it
uh,
isn't.
and it
Right.
isn't.
Thank you.
All right. Are there any other issues that anyone wishes to raise about the 13 clauses? All right, thank you, James. So I move that the 13 clauses be adopted with the change to do with the 3 days in the music committee change to 7 days. That's responding to emails. Do I have a seconder for that?
Yes, Christo will second.
Thank you, Christo. All right, all in favour?
Aye.
Aye.
And
Aye.
against? And against? Okay.
I abstain, please.
Yep. Okay. All right. Now, can we look at clause 4 and the membership? My understanding is that, Christo, you said that you felt there was some unease in the executive committee about the whole associate membership situation. We've never had associate members, and there was some unease about whether or not we might end up with associate members who could be quite difficult to to control. And I just thought we'd better try and piece together. There is no proposal from the Bylaws Committee about the membership clause four that's in the bylaws. So we're not asking you to approve anything. We're just seeking clarification about a concern that we don't quite understand. The associate members, first, apart from the fact that we haven't ever had one, the associate member can't vote, can't nominate people to the executive committee, can only pay $300 and really doesn't have any power. They can only speak when spoken to. And I'm just not sure what the concern is. And I think that ICEB is potentially missing out on income from individuals and entities who actually like us and what we're doing. And so I'm hopeful that when we sort out the membership clause, one of the things the president might consider doing is in December each year, write to all the associate members independently or in addition to the treasurer and raise the appreciation of ICEB for associate memberships and also do some marketing of what ICEB is up to and whether or not we need associate members. So there are consequences, and we've never kind of marketed associate membership to the best of my knowledge. So there are consequences that if we're going to have associate members at all, we have to involve them and stroke their egos and express appreciation, and but they can't do much except give us $300. Thank you very much. And so my concern is, can we just clarify, Christo, what is it that is troubling your committee about associate members? Or what is it
Yes.
that you think is troubling the executive?
Just a little background to allow people to understand. The Constitution deals with full membership, and those are that's dealt with in detail. And then it mentions associate members, but doesn't really say anything else. So, whatever is going to be decided about associate members will go into bylaws, which can be stipulated by the exec, and would not have to wait for the next General Assembly. Now, I think the issues we have there is, whom would we like to be able to qualify for associate membership? The exec expressed a concern that so-called troublemakers may want to join associate membership and then cause trouble at meetings or even in publications or so. But then also, we do not want to appear to be restrictive and not allow free expression or thought and so on. But that's the one concern. The other concern was how do we distinguish associate membership from observers? Associate members should get some bang for their buck. If they're going to pay membership fee, then they should receive some kind of privileges which observers do not have. Those are the two main issues, as Mary said, we're not going to take any decisions about that yet, but we would like to get input from the populace, what people think, how we should deal with it. If we have associate members who pay a membership fee, that can certainly be to the financial benefit of the organization. But then we have to make it worthwhile for those who are paying the money. I think we can put that for discussion and thought from people. Thank you.
Mary, Jen, and Stuart have their hands raised in that order.
Okay, Jen.
Okay, can you all hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Really.
Okay, thank you. I'll be as quick as I can because I'm one of the people that raised a lot of concerns about this. And a lot of my concerns have been addressed by the fact that, associate members will not have a vote and not, kind of be, to Crystal's point, kind of like an observer in that they would, the president would call on them. And also we had discussions that the country's Braille authority, like if I know that someone has caused us a lot of issues, and this sounds terrible to talk about it, and I do feel bad. I'm not trying to be a jerk, but sometimes we have situations where a person joins an organization like this just because they want to stir things up a bit. And if the country Braille authority knows this, they can kind of have some input. So a lot of my concerns have been addressed. So I don't really, my concerns were kind of much lessened than what they were because of that. Because from my understanding that also the Braille authority, the country Braille authority would have some input. In terms of the comment about associate members being like observers, I completely hear that. And obviously people need to get something, quote unquote, for their money. But I think the thing is that observers that we have, we don't typically have observers at our exec meetings, whereas my understanding would be that an associate member would be able to attend any meeting that we as the executive could attend. So I think that there is a difference, but definitely something that we should that that we would need to discuss. Thank you.
The current recommendation is actually not
Oops.
that associate members should attend all exec meetings, just the
Or can, not have to. Sorry.
midterm.
I think it's listed as one of their rights.
Yeah, that, yeah.
Okay, and Stuart has his hand up as well.
Yeah, hi everybody. It's Stuart here from Ireland. Yeah, I just want to, I suppose, echo what Crystal and Jenna said, and I suppose I have a huge concern around associate members and the disruption element. In some cases, we have a group here in Ireland who are very tricky, and I'm being very tame when I say that. I think last year we had an event. We put out a press release, and they put out a press release on the same day that was quite disruptive of what we were trying to do. And they're very militant, and they intimidate public bodies and others into following their lead. And I would be worried for ICEB, and I'm not, saying that maybe they would, but that a group like that might do significant damage to the great work that's been done. So I would just, sense a lot of caution around it.
Any other comments?
Yeah, this is FM. Sorry, I had supposed to raise my hands. Sorry. I'm hearing these concerns, and I am also just thinking about organizations that perhaps would want to have the be able to put on their website or whatever that they're associate members of ICEB, and whether what the role of associate membership would be other than just the dues. And the what is the reciprocal relationship, I guess, is really what I'm asking, for people, even if the membership committee feels, for example, that this is a disruptive group or something. Sometimes we don't know. So I'm just asking what kind of reciprocal relationship between an associate member and full voting members might be. What are they getting out of it? What are we getting out of it, to be blunt?
Okay. I think these are some really serious and interesting issues, and
Mary, you
I
have
hope.
another hand up.
Oh, I beg your pardon. The next
Matthew.
hand,
Yes,
Matthew.
Matthew.
Sorry, Mary, I put my hand up just as you started speaking. I was just going to say, I think to answer FM's first question, what do we get out of it? I think, to be very blunt about it, what we get out of it is money. And I'm certainly in favour of us using associate membership as a fundraising vehicle. What they get out of it, I'm not so sure about. I need to go and think about that. Maybe they just get a warm fuzzy feeling, and maybe for some associate members, that warm fuzzy feeling may be enough. If we allow them to, if we create a, I don't know, associate member or something supporter of ICEB logo, and we allow them to display it prominently, maybe some braille manufacturers would do that just for the ability to display the logo. I'm not sure, but the other thing I wanted to say was about disruptive groups. I'm pretty sure at some point, and I can't remember whether it made it into the last draft or not, there was a notion that we would stipulate that all associate members had to be in sympathy with the mission of ICEB. And we could probably strengthen that, you know, had to be in sympathy with Unified English Braille or something like that. And I can't remember whether that made it in, but it would seem to me that if we stipulate that from the outset that an associate member has to be in sympathy with UEB, we then have a vehicle for dismissing associate members who are clearly not in sympathy with UEB.
Okay, Judy has her hand up as well.
I think that one thing that it goes along with what Matthew said, I think one thing that associate members might get out of being associate members of ICEB is credibility. I mean, if they're in the business of, let's say somebody develops a Braille translator and they want to reinforce the idea that they are paying attention to Braille codes and not just having a rogue Braille translator that translates anything, then being an associate member of ICEB would help promote that.
Any more hands?
I don't. Oh, yes, FM.
Yes. Matthew, thank you for bringing up that discussion, and I am interested in knowing if that language actually did get into the discussion, because I think that is really important. And it wasn't in the original text that we got some months ago. So if indeed there is that stipulation, then I think that might cover some of our concerns.
We have another hand up from the panel and one from a participant attendee. The first is James.
Thank you. I was just going to ask, for the avoidance of doubt, could someone read the proposed clause on the rights and appointment of associate membership?
Hang
Because I'm
on,
fairly sure it was
before
fairly
we do
complete.
that, I want to clarify. This discussion right now is a discussion of the executive committee. So we will have an opportunity at the end of this session, if time permits, to have comments from observers, attendees. But right now, this conversation is just the executive committee.
And I would like to say that yes, we can read the clause,
But
James,
just for
but
the
this
avoidance of doubt, what is it
just
currently actually
know that
says?
I'm not sure As far as I'm aware, it does talk about having to uphold UEB.
Yes, I'm pretty sure it does. Yeah.
Yeah, it
Yes.
does. Yeah.
And so remember, and I would ask you, everyone, to remember that at the moment, the Bylaws Committee is seeking clarification of concerns, and that's exactly what we are receiving. We have not put up a proposed clause. We put up what I called a suggested clause, which is not a proposed clause and was put together prior to the help that you have given us this morning, this afternoon, this evening, to be very careful about the language that we use. When we give you a proposed clause, you will have a very good chance to say, no, you haven't heard us properly, and we want some more changes. So it was a half-baked suggested clause.
I'm confused. Is this something we're voting on now? A half-baked
No,
suggested clause? Oh.
it's a suggested clause, not a proposed clause.
Where is it?
It's
81.
eighty
It's in
one.
81. Okay, so we're just talking about it. We're not voting on
No,
anything. Okay.
no. We're trying to get some input from the
Does
rest of the
anybody?
executive committee.
Does anyone have this at hand to read it?
Do we need to? It's the key thing about it is that we wanted to understand better the problems that different members of the executive committee were raising. And I am certain that there is reference in Doc 81 to say you've associate members have to uphold UEB.
Okay.
And so we've got to, before we produce a proposed clause, we've got to make sure, is that strong enough? Are there stronger words that we wish to introduce? And we'll look carefully at that. So I really appreciate the conversation that we've had, and there are some, very important things that we've got to think through.
You have another raised, you have another, I'm sorry to interrupt you. You have another raised hand from Jen.
Okay.
I was just
Jen.
going to say, so am I understanding what basically what you're saying, Mary, is you wanted to talk about this to hear so you could make sure that you and the rest of the bylaws committee understand the concerns we had. Then you will take that away, and at a future exec meeting, you will actually bring the proposed clause so that we can discuss it.
Absolutely.
Okay, that makes sense to me.
One of the things that I haven't said is the proposed Article 4, which is the membership article, does some brilliant work on how we might describe our members. And the recommendation from the membership committee is that we treat our members in the same way that the United Nations treat their members. That is one member per country. That each it's a country that's the member, and the organisation within the country gets sorted out within the country, not something that ICEB gets involved in. And I think that's a very neat and sensible solution that Christo's committee has come up with. The current constitution allows us to have multiple organisations from the same country, and that could end up being really difficult for ICEB. Whereas the proposal, which we're not voting on this morning because we haven't sort of put everything together in one package, and I pr much prefer that we do. That was to do with full members, and full members, one member per country, really simple. And as it happens, currently we only have one member per country, so there's no need to panic about this problem. But It does cover off the possibility that we could have a rogue organisation wanting to join ICEB, and the proposed article for Article 4 for membership says, well, you can have as many organisations as you like. You, country, sort it out. And we have one organisation per country belonging to ICEB. And I think that's a very sensible thing, and it follows the way the United Nations does it. So thank you, Christo, for helping us with that. And fortunately, it's a problem we haven't had yet, and it guards against a problem that we might have. But of course, any change to the Constitution has to be discussed at the General Assembly and can only be actioned once it's been adopted by the General Assembly. So don't panic, we're not going to adopt something that we can't. So thank you very much.
Is this the
And
end of
there's
your report?
not quite, just to warn you that there's quite a lot still to do, but we've got a good way forward, and we really appreciate that. So thank you very much, everyone.
All right. Thank you very much, Mary. And we will, I'm sure, hear from bylaws again. So now we'll move on to our country reports. And first up is Australia.
Good morning. Can you all hear me?
Yes, we can.
Excellent. This is Amanda Ackett speaking. I'm Australia's representative for ICEB. There are three things I'd like to highlight from my report, and the rest can be taken as read. However, before I do that, I thought I would take a minute to introduce myself because I'm conscious that I've been in the role for about 4 months, and so many of you probably don't know anything about me. So, I'm totally blind, have been since birth. I'm a touch reader. In fact, I take a braille first approach where it's practical to do that. I live in Brisbane, state of Queensland, where I work in the public service here. And I've had various legal and policy roles there for some time. And that's why I am identified as a co-opted member of the Australian Braille Authority, because I don't belong to a member organisation, so I was asked to join because of my demonstrated interest in Braille. And not long after that, there was a need for someone to step into the role of country rep for ICEB. And I didn't hesitate to put my hand up for that because really it felt like the right decision, because I truly believe I wouldn't be where I am professionally or personally without Braille. And so for me, this is personally very significant to be involved in keeping Braille alive and thriving in this capacity. So thank you to the ICEB executive for agreeing to my appointment, and here I am. Now for the report. Since our last report in 2024, Australia has increased its offerings of our online UEB courses. So we have Foundations of Braille Literacy, and that's for teachers and parents who are supporting touch learners to develop their Braille reading and writing skills. And the Braille Music Notation Introductory course, and that's for anyone who uses or transcribes Braille music. And that one apparently is proving very popular, so that's good to see. And these courses build on our UEB series of courses in the literary and mathematics areas as well, and they've been around for a while. As a point of interest, I'll draw your attention to a project that's been going on for a while around First Nations and languages in Braille. Now, there are over 150 First Nation languages in Australia, and the challenge is to develop a Braille code that's going to serve all of those languages without sacrificing nuance. Now, finally, I'd like to talk about the South Pacific Educators in Vision Impairment, or SPEVI. Now, I've gone into quite a lot of detail in my report about the last conference that they held in 2025. And the next one will be in Sydney in January. And I know that our president of ICEB is very keen to have a trip to Sydney. So perhaps, Judy, you could think about that. And also in relation to SPEVI, I'd like to draw your attention to the position statement on Braille literacy. They worked very hard to put that together, and that's a great advocacy resource. I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda. And I'll see you in Sydney. That would be great. All right. Any questions for Amanda from the executive committee?
Yes, this is Frances Mary. Welcome, Amanda, again. Did you say that this is the UEB online course that now has the Braille music?
Yes.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you.
And Jen has her hand up.
Just two quick things. One, I actually, although I have been reading Braille music for many years, I'm no James Bowden, or Geordie Howell. Anyway, I did the online music one, and I thought it was fantastic. So I wanted to say that. And I also wanted to say that at some point, Amanda, I want to talk to you about the Braille, sort of unifying, quote unquote, Braille code for Indigenous languages, because I want to promote something like that in Canada. We have a couple of languages for which Braille codes have already been developed, but I have been wanting to do something more wide-ranging like that. And so I just will probably reach out to you at some point to talk about that, if that's all right.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right.
Oops. Yeah.
Let's move on to Canada.
Well, that worked out well. I guess I can just keep talking. Okay. So I too am just going to highlight a couple of things and figure that when people need a little bedtime reading, they can pull out my country reports. So, one thing I wanted to highlight is that as of our AGM, Braille Literacy Canada's AGM this past June, we now have a new president, Kim Kilpatrick. And Kim, is a Braille reader, and she's been involved in BLC for a long time. She is, an expert in Braille technology. She's done a lot of training and facilitating. She's also an artist. She does storytelling, and she's great at it, I must say. And she is definitely a Braille enthusiast as well. And so we're really pleased that Kim has agreed to take on the role of president. The other thing I wanted to note, one of the other things is, some of you may be familiar with the issue we had in Canada last fall, where our government thought it'd be fun to get rid of the free matter for the blind provision in its federal budget. And so I just wanted to reiterate that thanks to advocacy by all kinds of organizations, actually, and including library associations and even small businesses, but along with CNIB and CELA and NELS, the accessible libraries in Canada, along with BLC, of course. As of February 23rd, the government decided that that probably wasn't a good course of action to save money. And so they have removed, well, they actually added an amendment that took care of the problem. And so free matter continues to be something that is mandated by legislation, for which the Braille readers and many other people in Canada are very grateful and are thankful. And I wanted to just thank ICEB because, as you remember, we had signed a letter that was intended for organizations to just sort of say that they did not support what the government was doing, wanted this free matter, kind of attesting to the importance of it. So I just wanted to thank ICEB for your willingness to support us. It was I actually got to attend a Senate committee meeting and talk about the problems that would occur with, if this legislation was removed. And I actually took with me, just as a point of interest, I took my Braille copy of The Fellowship of the Ring. And we had a little teeny tiny print copy sitting on top, and many senators came up to me and just talked about how much of an impact that actually had, just seeing how big Braille books can be. So, thank you all. Just a last, final couple of points. We are still running our Brailler Bounce program, which I've talked about many times in the last several years. And to date, we've given away, we've rehomed something like 125 Brailers to people all across Canada. So people donate them, we refurbish them, and send them to people who need them free of charge. So it was meant to be just a 1 year initiative, and it was so successful that we just kept it going. Finally, CNIB has released its Braille proofreading, UEB Braille proofreading certification. So it's a joint CNIB and Braille Literacy Canada certification. And they've been working on the proofreading course for quite a while, and it's now available, and people can take it and be certified UEB Braille proofreaders in Canada. So that's, I don't have stats on how many people have done it yet because it's fairly new. And then just to say that BLC, among its many things that it's going to be doing in terms of promoting Braille and doing different things, we're going to start a podcast in September. And so more information coming about that. Kim and I are going to be the co-hosts, and we're going to kind of promote some Canadian things because there's a lot of wonderful international things that's great, but it's sometimes we like to have Canadian things too. However, I'm not going to limit us to that. So many of you can, you know, don't be surprised if you get an email from me at some point asking if you want to come on and be interviewed. So that is all I will say for now. And if anyone has questions, I'm happy to take them.
None so far. All right. Well, sounds good. Thank you, Jen.
Thank
All
you.
right. Let's hear from Stuart.
Thank you, Judy. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everybody. I'm delighted to present the 2026 country report from INBAF, the Irish National Braille and Alternative Formats Authority. Similar to Jen, I will sort of take it as read that people have hopefully been able to read the report. And if not, if you want a little bit of bedtime reading, you have it in your stack of documents. My updates will just cover four main areas: organizational development, Braille production services, the launch of the updated Irish Braille primer, and community engagement and partnerships. So, in terms of organizational development, I took over as chair and director of INBAF in June 2024, and Ilka Staglin, of course, who was one of the founding members of INBAF, who was chair for a very long time and brought the organization through a lot of growth, stepped down at that point. INBAF changed its name in mid-2024 from the Irish National Braille and Alternative Formats Association to the Irish National Braille and Alternative Formats Authority. And that strengthens our credibility within the disability community in Ireland. We took a decision to undertake a strategic review. We worked with an external facilitator, and the outcome of that was to incorporate INBAF as a company limited by guarantee, and this will happen later this year. We strengthened our board of directors through the recruitment of people with expertise in governance, research, education, communications, and social media. And I want to, in particular, thank Jen, who has been my critical listening ear for the last little while on our sort of strategic journey, and we're going to have another conversation on that next week, because I know Jen and has been through a similar process over the last number of years. In terms of Braille production services updates, our colleagues at Reading Services in Child Vision produced over 8,300 transcriptions during the previous academic year. And they continue to focus on accessible educational materials and digital delivery. Vision Ireland Braille Library Production Services have expanded their leisure Braille reading opportunities through schemes such as One City, One Book, and also a Braille Book Club. And there, we've also just had a Braille Book Club, which has been developed, or rather a Braille support group, which has been launched by Fighting Blindness, who are a leading research charity here in Ireland. So there's plenty of Braille support and indeed peer support for people who want to know more about Braille, especially maybe for people who haven't been exposed to Braille earlier on in their lives. A big piece of work for INBAF last year was the launch of the updated Irish Braille Code. This was over a decade in the making, and you can get more information on inbaf.ie/UIB. You can download the primer, and I want to acknowledge in particular Pat Farrell, who was the principal author of that report. We got some nice press coverage at the time. And finally, in terms of community engagement and partnership, one of the things I've been very keen that INBAF would do would have a lot more direct contact with the sight loss community. And to that end, we've been running both in-person and online events. And we joined the Disability Federation of Ireland, which is an umbrella group for not-for-profits and charities within Ireland, again, to strengthen our reach, our voice, and to learn from others in the wider disability community. So in closing, it's been a busy 2 years. The next 2 years are certainly exciting. INBAF is going to be busy in terms of its corporate governance and its growth. I am very grateful to the board members and to our founding members who continue to support INBAF. And we remain and are very glad to be proud members of ICEB. I'm very happy to take any questions if there are any. Hi, Matthew.
Hi, Stuart. It's not a question. I just wanted to commend you on the last part that you said there about being much more present in the blind and partially sighted community. I think this is something that's really important, and I think it's all too easy for organisations that are authoritative and standard setting, and you know, to get very deep into the weeds of standard setting and forget sometimes that actually there are users who are using those standards. And I really think it's a very good thing that INBAF is doing to be more present in the blind community. So I just wanted to congratulate you on that.
Oh, Matthew, thank you. And that's very kind of you. I mean, we did a little straw poll over the last year and a half, and just talking to people from the sight loss community here, even talking to some of the people who work in our founding member organizations. And unfortunately, very few people had heard of INBAF. So we still have more work to do in that regard.
Let's talk more about that in the second half of today's. Yeah. Good. Anyone else? Okay. We have with us today Locke from Nepal. Locke, would you like to tell us about how things are going with Braille in Nepal?
Yeah, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. We can hear you.
First of all, I'm very sorry for the last 3 days I could not get. Anyway, today I got this opportunity. So thank you for the opportunity. Regarding Nepal, yes, Nepali language is our national language, and English is our second language. So the people here in Nepal, mostly the Braille is confined, or Braille is mainly used in schools and colleges. And the blind people these days, the digital ones, they also covering, but there is a national organization called the Nepalese Braille, and then we're working with the UED as well. Because the people from Nepal also, they have to learn the different other development, because most of the products that we use are from in English language. So the people who are using Braille, they have to know the Braille, English Braille as well. So Mr. Homnath Aryal is the chair of the National Nepalese Braille, and he's also conducting the UEB. So we had some programs, especially focusing on schools, resource teachers and teachers for the blind and the school students who are using that Braille. So Nepal has been divided into, there are several provinces in Nepal. And then the last 3 years, we have reached up to three provisions. But still, we have four provisions, provinces, not provision, provinces remain to get in. So there are nearly 70, 80 schools for the blind, where blind students read, study. And then we have gone to about 150 people and teachers, issues teachers, and others that have got the introduction and some workshop or some training in on UEB so that we can use the unified English Braille all over the country. But still, there are some challenges because the government has, we are pushing the government to implement all these provisions for the to be implemented in all schools, but we have to reach all the provinces, not as. So we are trying our best. And then you know all that Nepal is a developing country, so there are some still the authorities, the persons from the government authorities, they do have to know the actual situation of the school, that Braille, and then the students need. There are only two organizations that print the books in Braille, so they have to be trained, or they have to know what is going on for the unified English Braille, because in mathematics and science, still we are not, we are following the Nemeth Braille, and then we have to shift from that Nemeth to unified, but still it takes time. So we are just going to go, we are going to just teach the, train the teachers and the students about the unified English Braille. So this is what we are going doing in Nepal, and I think we have to do a lot in this field so that more and more people, blind people and visually impaired people, that can be benefited from the unified English Braille. So we have, we are planning, we are in the process to work with the organization and some government. We are pushing the government, asking, requiring, requesting the government to have some programs that should be that should reach the UEB, reach to all the schools. So that is what we are doing, and I'll let you, if you have some questions later on. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Locke?
Yes, this is Frances Mary. And I just wanted to make sure that you had been aware of the World Blind Union, ICEVI, Global Braille Initiative, and the surveys that have been released. So if to we're encouraging everyone in as many countries as possible to ask people to participate in the surveys, and so just making sure that the link has been sent to Nath and to you and anyone else who might wish to participate.
Yeah, I know about the ICEVI, and in some plus, in some conferences, I have attended the conference as well. So I will ask the releases that publishes, they have published. Yeah, we have gone, but still, yeah.
Excellent. No, that's great. It's such, it's a big world, and the surveys are brand new, and so there's a lot of excitement, but also some, you know, just making sure the regions.
The survey we have found, and then I go through, and yes, yay. I found, but still, thank you.
Good, good. All right, anyone else?
Judy, are you taking questions from attendees?
Not at the moment. We will be taking questions from attendees. Okay, let's move on to New Zealand.
Hi, Judy and all. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
It's Maria Stevens here, and it's a privilege to be presenting the Braille Authority of New Zealand, Aotearoa Trust report. Like previous speakers, I'll just pull out four key areas to share with you. We are now revising Essentials of Braille Formatting, EBF, first written in 2014 by Janet Reynolds, then Head of Braille Production at Blind Low Vision NZ. EBF is being updated under the leadership of the Tactile and Technology Literacy Centre. That was the first point, and I'm sure people have read or are going to read this, so I won't cover everything. Moving on to our accreditation continues through the Trans-Tasman Certificate of Proficiency in Unified English Braille. This is a very successful collaboration with the Australian Braille Authority. And we are, New Zealand has set and just sent off the papers to Australia just yesterday, actually. Moving on to music continues to thrive at Blends with monthly Saturday sessions of music, drama, and dance. In January, every 2 years, Blends hosts a music school for blind adult musicians who are supported by sighted transcribers and teachers. And the lucky last, in the assembly at the 2024 assembly, Brad Cohen from New Zealand Opera demonstrated sending opera surtitles to Braille displays. Developments have continued, and I know some people on this call have used that service when they're in New Zealand for the GA. That's it from me. Thank you. Questions, sorry.
Thank you, Maria. Any questions for Maria? Okay. Moving on to South Africa, Christo.
Thank you. Yes, and I am presenting the report from our Braille Authority, the South African Braille Authority, or SABA as we call it. In South Africa, we have 11 official languages, and they all have grade 2 Braille systems, and they also all have been unified. And we've just had a massive redevelopment of one of them, the Afrikaans language Braille system. Our authority has adopted it, and we have given Braille producers 18 months, which will elapse at the end of April next year, to get ready for production using the new rules. So the Duxbury table will be updated, and I will do the Leblui table for updates for Afrikaans. Just a few other points that I would like to highlight. In my report, I mention the Antoinette Botha Braille Museum, just a bit of background about it. The name Antoinette Botha, she was a very prominent Braille-related person in South Africa and also internationally. She served on the ISEC exec and in 1997, she received a fellowship award in Baltimore. Now, she had the most amazing braille knowledge that that I've come across. I think she had expert knowledge of all 11 official languages, although she didn't speak nine of them. She knew the old maths braille and computer braille. She was a music teacher at Pioneer School, so she was also an expert in music braille and chess notation. So we thought it would be apt to name the museum after her. The museum, if you want to have a look at it, is at abbm.org.za, ABBM for the Antonia Goethe Braille Museum. And it's an interesting site because you can go on a virtual tour and there's a lot of audio information on it. It was developed by a blind developer, Eugene Smith. He has his own private business called A11Y, and it is his work to make sure that, or to assist companies to make sure that their platforms are accessible. Then one final thing that I'd like to highlight is our copyright battle that we've been having in South Africa, because up until recently, very recently, there's been no legislation enabling copyright exemptions to have material made accessible for blind persons. And I always tell people that when I was studying law, I had to become a criminal in order to become a lawyer, because I had to do my own thing when I couldn't get copyright permission to have my material converted into Braille. In fact, our largest Braille producer in the country, Braille Services of Blind SA, tells us that they were not able to get copyright permission for 9 out of every 10 publications they wanted to make accessible. 90% of stuff that we wanted to make accessible, we were not allowed to. So we took the copyright legislation to the Constitutional Court, which found in our favor with a final judgment on the 7th of May last year, declaring those sections of the Copyright Act of 1978 unconstitutional. And it crafted a section to be read into it using the wording from the Marrakesh Treaty. So we have that now for local publications, but now even after 13 years, the country has not yet ratified the Marrakesh Treaty. And, you know, it's just incomprehensible that that there doesn't seem to be this political will. I've just spoken to our attorneys this morning, and they are now busy drafting necessary papers for legislation. So we're going to court again to get government to move on and ratify the Marrakesh Treaty. So those are the points highlighted. The report is there available if you want to read more of the other matters. And I'm happy to answer any questions that there might be. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue. Thank you, Christo. Any questions for Christo? Hearing none, we will move on to the United Kingdom. James?
Thank you very much. So again, I will only highlight a few things from the report. It's all there at your leisure to read. One thing that came up is the issue of languages. And I mention this because it may affect other countries. We are taking into account what other countries are doing. It became apparent that it was a bit of a wild west out what transcribers were actually producing for certain foreign languages in educational settings. And so UCAF is looking at that issue again. And we hope to publish some guidance shortly. We're very grateful to ICEB, in particular for the guidance on choice and placement of grade one indicators. And in turn, that will inform the revisions of the UCAF documents on mathematics. And in turn, that will inform the revision of the RNIB series of books popular with teachers using UEB4. And there's hopefully going to be a trilogy eventually, maths, science, and modern languages. We're very encouraged by the development of lots of technology in the last few years, including the music translation programs, the eBraille file format, and multi-line braille display. And this is a very exciting time for Braille, I think, where there's lots of new possibilities and development is occurring all the time. There's more work to be done, we think, on modification and presentation of Braille exam papers. And we're also concerned there's no official qualification in the UK about teaching Braille to adults. There is for children, you have to be a qualified teacher of the visually impaired. So we were particularly interested in the research and training resource presentations that we had yesterday. I highly recommend them if you missed the presentations. On the teaching of Braille, I guess I should like to highlight the curriculum framework for, look at the title right, Curriculum Framework for Children and Young People with Vision Impairment, or CFVI, which highlights the key areas which children and their families need special support. And you can look at that on the RNIB and I think probably the VUE website as well. We're pleased that over 90% of settings have embedded that into their work, which is really good news. I'm surprised that no one so far has mentioned the Braille 200, the 200th anniversary of the invention of Braille. That's come up in the last couple of years. And we had a great program in the UK, including a special launch event at the British Library and a wonderful day organised by the Braillists Foundation at New College on World Braille Day 2025. So, yes, there's more in the report and exciting times. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, James.
Do you want to add anything, Matthew?
No, I didn't know. That was very good. Thank you.
Any questions for James or Matthew or no? All right. And last but certainly not least, the United States, Kelly.
Yes. All right. Hello, everyone. I am happy to present the ICEB Country Report for the United States. I'm going to just highlight a few key milestones from the Braille Authority of North America. First and foremost, BANA is celebrating a major milestone, its 50th anniversary. And we have been commemorating that throughout the year with ongoing initiatives, including monthly social media highlights of its member organizations, We've created commemorative t-shirts that are available through Aloha Braille. So when you take a look at the full country report, you will see the link there if you would like to purchase one, and other celebratory events. During our spring board meeting in Pittsburgh, we marked the occasion by welcoming a new full member organization, integrating new associate members, and electing our new officers. We also had a wonderful cake. All right. So we have also been, our technical committees have been highly active. And over the last few years, we have finalized a few critical code book updates, structural revisions, and publications. First, the Rules of Unified English Braille 2024 and Guidelines for Technical Materials. With those coming out, we have provided critical updates and clarification and new examples for transcribing mathematics and scientists in UEB. For our Braille formats, which was first published in 2016, and foreign language sections, we have updated that guidance to clarify passage indicators, running heads, and page numberings. We've updated chemical notation using the Nemeth Braille code, which is still used in the United States. And we produced that in collaboration with the American Printing House for the Blind. We also provided an errata for that document, and then updated our Nemeth Braille code 2022 errata. So in closing, we BANA continues to strengthen Braille literacy and refine technical transcription standards and celebrate 50 years of service to the blind and visually impaired community.
Thank you, Kelly. And any questions for the United States? FM, do you have anything to add?
No, I think Kelly covered it all.
Right, thank you. All right, let's open up for questions from the attendees, observers, questions on any of the country reports that you've heard. Sue, if you could manage this.
Okay, actually we have a question from a panelist, from executive. Okay. Mary, yes. Mary Schneckenbeck. I'm sorry, Mary.
Good morning. I'm sorry. To raise my hand at this point. There's one extra thing in the New Zealand country report that matters heaps to me personally. In New Zealand, we have three official languages. There's our New Zealand Sign Language, there is Te Reo Māori, and there's English. Now, Te Reo Māori has macrons. And at the very beginning, when UEB was introduced, we talked with Joe Sullivan and agreed that we would continue to use a single cell macron, dots 456. It's a single cell, not a two cell macron. And we have introduced that in the mid 1960s. And to be fair, it actually came from the Braille Authority of North America and the long vowel, dots 456, which was used in Latin scansions. So those of us taking Latin got that long vowel from North America, and that's how it ended up in New Zealand as the single cell macron. That's been fine for hard copy Braille, but a real problem for those of us with screen readers. And you might think, well, just, you know, one cell in the macron, well, what does that sort of save? Well, there are quite a few Te Reo words that have more than one macron in them. And the simplest one to explain is the word kāpō, K-A macron, P-O macron. And that's the Te Reo word for blind. And so if you have a single cell macron for that, you save two cells. And so we put in a request to LibLui, who provides, or really to James, who provides the software for JAWS and NVDA and who knows who all else. And James and Clive and Matthew work together, and we are Banzat has endorsed their work to give us a single cell Macron in LibLui. And as a user of it happens to be NVDA, but as a user of a Braille display who is seeing Te Reo words in English every day, thank you to James and Clive and Matthew for your work to give us a single cell Macron, and thank you for responding to my request to fix this problem.
All right. Thank you, Mary. Any questions from anyone about anything that's happened so far today?
I don't see any hands raised.
All right, we had some hands earlier. I
We did.
guess they changed their mind. I'm so sorry. Oh, very good.
There we go, Jody Doolin. Jody, you need to unmute.
Hello?
There you are.
I did press unmute and it kept. I'm speaking with my AirPods in today. I don't know if I sound different. No, I had my hand up before and then I put it down, waiting for later. But no, I was just very. It's lovely to hear Locke speak. I haven't heard from Locke or Hom or met them before. And I pulled up the Nepal Country Report and I could see that Locke is actually the Nepal member for the Technical Materials Committee. So I was very interested to read that. I couldn't tell from the report who was actually the representative for the Code Maintenance Committee for Nepal. Is it Hom or is it Locke? I
Homna,
wasn't sure.
Homna,
Homnath.
Homnath, yeah.
Homnath
Homna.
is, yeah. I can see, I know his name. I just haven't ever met him or spoken to him. So no, that was just good to know.
My
Thanks for
27.
clarifying.
Yes. He's
Thank
Nepal's
you.
his name, yeah.
Well, look forward to hearing from you in discussion, Locke,
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
on the technical stuff.
Yeah, I'm also going through the UED, that technical committee's development that is going on. So I go through that. But in our country, the blind people, they are not studying the mathematics in higher school, higher classes. They study mathematics only up to 10th standard. So that the discussions or the progress that is going on UED on mathematics, so it's a little bit complicated.
Yeah,
So that,
but shape mode will be relevant because shape mode is taught in the earlier
I only
years.
go
Well,
through the concept.
shapes are everywhere.
Thank you, thank you.
Yeah, well, stay tuned.
Okay, any more questions?
Yes, we have a question from Artemis Gilbert.
Yes, go ahead.
You need to unmute. Okay, go ahead.
I'm
Yes,
sorry,
we can
this
hear you.
maybe my hand was raised from the last meeting, but I did not have a question for today. I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you.
We have a executive committee member and an attendee.
Who raised their hand first?
I think it was simultaneous, but well, we go with James first.
Oh, okay, James.
Thank you. Question to Mary. Did the LibLui work get checked in?
Well,
Yeah, I
I'm
think
not.
that question is for Clive.
I was just
That is a
going to
Clive
say,
question. I'm not Mary, but I don't think it has got checked in.
No, I
And I
don't think
was,
it did either.
we have an open email thread, don't we, James? With Clive. So, unless RNIB's spam blocker blocked it, Clive did send us an email about a week ago. So
Yes.
we'll check in this thread. Yes, because there's a milestone, isn't there, on the 31st of August.
That's
You need
right.
to
So
make it by then.
if you want it checked, if you want it included in the September Libluvi release, get it in as soon as possible.
Yeah, so I did, as you said, I think the job is done, but I don't know the process to submit it. But
Right.
I was sort of hoping that either you, James, or Matthew would just give it the once over as well, just to, a separate pair of eyes can maybe find any problems. But I think I've done everything that we needed to do, and if you think it's worthy of submission, then you could help me submit it, but I think we're at that point. It does seem to work when I test it. So we'll see. So if you guys could
Okay.
look at that email and get back to me, that would be great.
Thank you.
Okay,
All
and
right.
the other is
Well,
Debbie Gillespie.
okay, this is going to be our last question. Thank you, Debbie.
Debbie, you need to unmute.
Good afternoon. I just want to add a point to the membership discussion that indeed somebody did ask if we did discuss member. Proposed membership associate members being in sympathy with UEB, and that definitely did come up during the discussion. I did read the notes from that meeting, and it doesn't. You were looking for the exact clause, and I don't. I just have the notes, and it isn't spelled out there. So, if the bylaws committee wants to review it further, that's good. But it did come up in the membership meeting discussions. And
Thank you,
I'm
Debbie.
also assuming, my memory may be incorrect, I'm also assuming at this point that, of course, it has to be approved by the executive, so, or at least the member country's braille authority. So I don't know where that would stand, and I don't see a reference to it anywhere. So that's just more food for thought. That's it for me. Thanks.
Thank you, Debbie. Any other comments before we adjourn this session? All right, it's 21:30. We will adjourn and for a, actually it's 21:32, but we will take a 13-minute break and we will return at 21:45. Thank you very much.